Welcome to the Penny Arcade Staff Podcast, and today we have with us
Ryan
and Dave,
and soon to be Gavin.
Yes, we have hopefully a rushed schedule today, so we are going to have to move things along and start out without Gavin, and then Gav's going to show up, and Brian's going to leave potentially.
Yeah. It's close to PAX.
Yeah, you guys understand. Lives,
so we're kind of like cramming in those last minute, like little meetings and tasks and stuff. Like maybe you'll even hear a little bit of background noise as we talk, because right below us now is a truck that's loading for PAX.
Noisy truck.
But Josh, can you hear me?
Yes. Can I come in? Okay. I can hear you. You're not microhulic. You don't need to do that.
Yeah.
Are we recording?
We're recording. T-shirt probably work out.
Yeah.
Fans.
Yeah.
So we
Hey, if you want an Are We Recording t-shirt, let us know.
You should let us know.
Yeah.
Because then I'll actually make it.
That would be, I would like that shirt.
Yeah. That's a very Batmilk shirt.
So today we are talking about another movie that we watched recently.
Yep.
It's a really cool movie that I love. So I made everybody else watch
it. Josh made me watch.
This movie apparently ruined Brian.
And it's called Frank.
I had a really good time.
I love this movie. It's one of my new favorites.
So I think that this actual whole thing came about because Josh and I had like a long conversation. I think the origin is just that I sort of like this genre of stuff where it's like craftspeople, like examination of craft.
No, it was anime specifically. It was music anime.
Oh, yeah, because I was watching Your Lie in April.
Yeah.
And I was talking about how like the soundtrack was good but that was also an extension of that idea. Like I liked that anime because it was an examination of talent and craftsmanship.
Mm-hmm.
And then this movie, which was Frank, absolutely was an examination of like what is an artist and the meaning of art and the different motivations of people in the creative process. Like, you know, some people want to do it to be famous and get rich and that's their measure for success. And other people do it because they like the creation. They want to feel like they're making something new.
And one of your favorite movies is Once, right? You
love Once. Yeah. Well,
yeah. I can see some parallels between the two, even though they're very different.
Huge genres. Glenn Hansard fan. Yeah.
Never seen Once. What is Once?
Really? It's a sort of semi-biographical movie about Glenn Hansard, who lead singer of The Frames and Spell Season. So shot as like a sort of a documentary, right? It's sort of a documentary.
There's movie. No interviews though. It's just kind of following them around.
Just following them around, slice of life kind of thing. And
it's very like recording studio, spending time working on songs.
Yeah, he's a busker. And then he meets a girl who turns out also plays piano. And so they develop a sort of friendship. Not really a relationship. I think the subset, what makes that movie more interesting than just it being cool music and all that stuff is that it's about a platonic relationship between a guy and a girl and how kind of complicated that can be to maintain how it's necessary, like boundaries are necessary in some ways, and having one or the other person guarding them can help the other person when they're sort of off their rails a little bit.
Huh.
I thought that, and obviously the music is incredible.
Yeah. That movie. Music for both these movies is really great. I actually immediately searched for any songs that I could find from this movie, even though they're kind of all weird.
They're so good.
What did you find?
There's a single for the closing track, I Love You All, I think is the name of it.
Yeah.
And then I really wanted to hear the song that they were recording in the recording studio. That song kills, but
that stuff, man. I wish they had gone a little more in depth with that, because they do have a soundtrack, but it's only like basically what you hear in the movie. It's not the full songs, you know. It's such good.
The
songs.
Music is like, it's in that sort of like rock meets Sigur Rós space.
Yeah, it's so
like,
weird.
Like a lot it's of ambient rock, and they're using like weird instruments, and some of them are homemade, and
someone's screaming usually, but.
It's like
just in the background.
It's like, I mean, bands that it's in the realm of are like After Clang, which is a band that I like. And After Clang made like a concept album where they went to like one of the most remote corners of Siberia and recorded ambient sounds from a space where there are no sounds.
Mm, yeah.
So like the wind moving through a silo.
No. That they have the whole like 5-minute scene where they're just recording.
Random field recordings. Yeah. That was really funny.
And then the next part was all them doing the exercises of like exploring the outer realms of their creativity.
Yeah. Gav's walking up, so he'll be joining us shortly. I don't want to launch into what the movie's actually about until
I suppose
shows.
We'll just continue. All right,
that's a
this vein.
Pause. So, I would say that the like performance. We can talk about the performances, right?
Sure, sure.
That we
what's
can,
the guy's? What's Frank's name? I can't remember his name.
I don't know
forget.
If I actually want. Well, for people, I don't know. We're gonna talk spoilers, but
yeah, I mean,
I knew
you
who
should
was
expect
beforehand.
Spoilers.
But if it would have just showed up out of nowhere, if I would have not known that he was in it, I would have been really excited.
I knew the name, but I didn't realize who it was for a long time.
Yeah.
Like I knew he was famous, but I was like, who the fuck is this guy? I know I've seen him before. Yeah. The name is super
you
familiar.
You don't even see his face straight on very much.
No, you see it at the very end, and it's even not, it's super clear. Like he kind of looks like he could be.
It's Fassbender.
Yeah.
Michael
yeah,
Fassbender.
Mike, yeah. Oh man, he plays that part so good.
He does. It didn't even sound like him at first to me.
No, you would
like,
never
I knew
tell.
It was him the whole time because I saw like a synapse. Synopsis.
Cliff's.
Hi, Gavin. Welcome to
Gavin
our podcast.
Gavin has arrived.
They all know that
Cliff's
you are.
Notes.
How could you not remember the Lauder movie? It just I was like burns prepared. Into your brain yeah. so good.
We were supposed to record this at the beginning of the week, but I did not read the email and failed to watch the movie over the weekend. So,
guys, what's Frank about? Can anyone describe it?
Who wants to give the breakdown?
Frank.
Breakdown.
Is about
it's your
this
one of your
kid. I guess he's fresh out of college, it seems like, or something.
Yeah.
Who works a shitty job and wants to be a musician and plays the keyboard pretty poorly.
Yeah.
And happens upon this band that pulls up.
They're touring through town.
Yeah, they're on a tour and they pull up. And
well,
this guy jumps out screaming into the ocean.
No, he was dead.
No, he wasn't dead.
No, he wasn't dead.
Oh, okay. But no, but he was already in there though, right? Because
he was
like,
just in the
oh,
ocean.
Oh, no, he walked by when he was already in the ocean. That's right.
Yeah, he was in the ocean.
Yeah, he's freaking out.
He's trying to die.
In the ocean.
Yeah, he's trying to kill himself.
He finds out it's their keyboardist and they have an opening and they ask him to join. Somebody asked him.
Ask
the
him,
tour guy.
They're like, hey, can you play C, G, and F?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah.
Like,
cool.
Show up at nine.
Yeah. And then
like, should we practice? And they're like, nah.
Yeah, like stage door, 9 o'clock.
In between you see him write a few
songs.
Really poor songs.
Yeah.
I really liked that part.
They're funny though.
It felt like what writer's block feels like, which I've never seen it like perfectly captured like
where
that, where he's just
walking.
Singing what he sees.
Yeah. Girl in the red dress,
it's
what
like,
you doing with that bag?
It's like a bad Randy Newman. But yeah, like I was like, oh God, it's like so cringy to watch him do it. But
girl
then I
in
know,
the blue pants, do you know the girl with the red dress?
Yeah, so good.
I know I've like been in that position before, trying to like write something.
And I feel
and
like,
just, like
the besides we discussed that Fassbender plays Frank perfectly, but also whoever the actor is who plays the
never
British
remember
dude,
his name. Yeah,
plays this.
You mean
this character?
The actor that plays the main character?
Yeah.
That's General Hux.
Yeah, but what's his name?
What's the actor's name?
In the
I
film?
Couldn't ever remember what his name was
in
Star Wars either.
That other rom-com, About Time.
Yeah, I love About Time.
Yeah.
About Time destroys me.
I think he's still Hux in Frank. I think that's canon.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's part of the Star Wars universe.
The first time I watched About Time, I fucking was leaking.
We're not talking
every
about Time.
Face.
We're talking about Frank.
So he gets to the show, shows up, walks up on stage.
He randomly walks up to the back of the stage and
just like walks right
gets
through
in,
the back
walks,
door.
They're doing some
the
ambient
stage.
Noise bullshit.
Yeah,
that
they're
you're
freaking
like,
out.
The shit.
He walks onto the stage and just
stands there.
Just starts standing there.
And then Frank shows up, and that's the first time you see Frank, who they've talked about like once or twice, and he's wearing a giant papier-mâché head.
It's pretty sweet.
But then he just plugs it in kind of proto-man style and just starts wailing. And it's actually really pretty all right.
Yeah, and then like the music
like
comes
the music.
Together. Yeah. And then, it's like this
ambient
thing.
Actually,
you're like,
wow,
what's going on? And there's nothing there. And then he steps out and starts essentially like chanting out lyrics.
Yeah.
And then the band just comes together behind him. And you're like, fuck, this is they're good. Like,
yeah,
this is actually
cool.
Kind of cool.
Yeah.
But I mean, like the side thing is that the dude was, you hear them doing an interview on the radio earlier as part of the show, as part of the movie, like the setup. And you realize that that's context for the dude being in the ocean, that there's like, this sort of rifty kind of sort of sandpapery.
There's not really good vibes throughout the band, specifically from
Frank holds them together. Everyone's there for Frank.
Yeah, everybody's just there for Frank.
But then, like, the other sort of leader of the band, was it
Clara?
Clara is like one of these sort of like chaotic, considers herself to be a chaotic genius, right? That like is one of these sort of people who seems to think that there's beauty in chaos and tries to sort of like break down and wants to always be doing something that's like never been done before.
Yeah.
Sort of how she comes across, and will always push that any music, even if something's good as it is, will push it into like the edge of weird.
And she's played by Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, Maggie Gyllenhaal. Yeah.
So, she's done very well, but you get so mad.
What's cool about the casting though, is everybody's actually performing.
Yeah.
That drummer has never been in a film before.
Really?
She was cast because she was a good drummer.
That's weird, because I was like, I recognize her.
She
but
was
I didn't.
Yeah, she was just, you know, she did a good job too. Like everybody in the film
was
fine.
Her name was Nana. I thought that was so cool.
Well, it helped that like the bassist
didn't speak English.
So yeah. we didn't really tell how.
No, but it was still like, even that worked. Like, of course their band would be weird enough to have people that like half of them couldn't communicate with.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Fassbender did all those vocals. Like,
yeah.
And
yeah.
I also read that they recorded it on set too. Like they didn't do like,
they didn't play
like
it.
When you're watching it in the movie, it's actually happening.
Yeah.
Basically. Which
yeah,
I
it
thought
be, it'd be weird to try to fake all that.
But no, that's what you would usually do. I mean, if you're filming a music video or something, right? Like, I don't know. It's, I just,
yeah, but
that
you're
that
not
was,
in a music video. You're not making it seem like you're actually there.
Right.
You know,
but I thought that was really interesting that, you know, that just seems like it would
Those
be a difficult, like, take to do, like, okay, well, you're trying to act and you're trying to like nail this nonsense.
Yeah,
definitely that kind of movie.
At this point,
though,
I think just as sort of a warning for people, I think now we're gonna start pushing. Seems like the momentum is we're gonna start pushing into super spoilers. So if this if we've tantalized you enough and you want to watch the movie, like, press stop now. It's on Netflix.
We'll wait. We'll be right here.
Yeah.
Go watch it and then come back, because I think the next step now is to start talking about like, what does the ending mean and what the different parts of the like latter parts of the movie that, so we kind of gave you the setup and the synopsis, more or less sort of what Josh told me before I watched it.
Well, and then there's one more thing that's part of the setup, which is after that, they decide that they want to take him to their recording studio to record, which is in the middle of nowhere.
Well, they mask it as we have a gig.
Yeah.
Weekend.
So he doesn't even know that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It was just a gig.
Yeah.
And so he drops everything, packs up,
takes a weekend off work.
Yeah.
And goes. And then, so now we're going to roll into spoilers. So, cut.
And welcome.
Hi, welcome back.
Welcome back. I'm glad you enjoyed Frank as much as we did.
Take a minute. Get a glass of water, because you're a little bit fucked in the head right now, aren't you? Just, I mean, if that resonated, the movie resonated with me emotionally. So
I found it.
You said it messed
very
you up.
Depressing.
And I want to know why it messed you up,
man.
I had a good time almost the whole time.
I loved it.
I loved it, but the ending was super depressing to me.
Yeah, there's something.
Oh, it
about
was real sad.
The belief in the sort of creative genius who turned out to be sort of not. I will say this. I liked that the message was essentially that, like, the real moral of the story is that on some level you don't. I think it's supposed to be saying that you don't need a tragedy or like a tragic life to be creative.
Absolutely.
Although it's delivered by parents, like, to, it's sort of 50-50, right? Because there was a tragedy.
Well,
that happened to,
it wasn't that there was a tragedy. Like, obviously he the character Frank has difficulties in his life, but the idea that you had to have some shitty childhood where you were from a crummy town, or your parents died or treated you like shit, or you grew up poor, like all these ideas that, like, that kind of struggle and strife is the only thing that drives creativity. And I think more specifically the kind of creativity that sounds that is emotional, that conveys that kind of like hurt and emotion, the idea that you had to have some horrible tragic thing happen to you in order to be in that place.
Is it like essentially an argument that empathy is enough on some level, that, or that there is sort of like a depth to any background? Because on some levels, like, that thesis is sort of an argument that privilege or a lack of, I think the main character sort of thought that a lack of privilege was required to be part of
Yeah, he had this ignorant...
Like, privilege was a block.
He had this ignorant mindset, like, God, I wish I had a shitty childhood, yeah. Like, which is such a, you know, obviously such an ignorant thing
yeah.
to say.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, I think the idea is basically not... I took away from it that, like, it is foolhardy to, and necessary to, like, romanticize the negative things, even if they do exist and are influencing yeah. your creativity in some way that, like, obviously that's not something you want to celebrate. Those people aren't like, God, I'm really happy I had a horrible, shitty life so that it inspires this music. Like, yeah. that's ridiculous. If you're inspired to write, you can find something to write about. You yeah, don't need that.
There's relatable, I mean, in some ways, like, Frank's genius, if you, like, dig into his lyrics, was sort of like, he's talking about what's right in front of you, but delivers it in sort of this way.
Yeah,
that,
like, he's
that
seeing the world
it
through
to something
a different
slightly
lens.
Larger. He's like, yeah. He's, at the end, he's like just singing about the fucking wall in front of him, but then somehow like ties it to like a bigger theme to like tie everyone in the bar together.
Yeah. He writes a song about a tuft of carpet.
Yeah.
But it sounds good.
Yeah. Well, Stephen Rankins, I think he did all the music. Like, he wrote everything for the film. And he also did the soundtrack for Room, which I haven't seen.
I haven't seen that either.
Yes. Or Stephen Renix is his name, rather. But yeah, he wrote all that stuff.
But there, I mean, that was a familiar sort of naive sense that I really related to from the main character, the idea that like sort of my privilege would be a block to my creativity or the creative process was a hindrance. And I remember even back in high school watching Dawson's Creek and being like, fuck, even he get like he's supposed to be this creative character. And everyone in high school knew I wanted to be a writer. And so they were
just
like, you're writer
Dawson.
And I looked a little bit like him. And then like his parents go through a divorce and that sort of like they write it that like feeds his creativity. And I was like, I don't even have Dawson anymore. Like,
well,
my,
it's, and
I
it's
like a great childhood.
That's the problem, right? Is that's it's an idea that is like so perpetuated by all media, like unrealistically to the point that it makes it look like it truly is the only way or the majority of musicians have that. And it's like, that's not.
But I absolutely had that phase.
It's not true. Some people are just like, you know, their parents are really good to them. And that's what fosters their creativity because they're encouraged and, you know, supported in that.
It's watered and fed and blossomed.
Yeah,
and they're given a skill set and then they get to explore the skill set.
But that doesn't make for a good story, right? It's much easier to make a movie about somebody who's like, you know, their parents are abusive and then, you know, oh, now they're driven to make music about that terrible time.
I mean, and there's probably a secondary conversation here, an argument to be made that there in especially in this the current internet environment, that there is a level of like that you sort of have to overcome an eye roll to get past. I don't know. I would like to have that discussion and figure that out, but it's probably not for this moment.
Yeah, that is an interesting concept. That's what you have to break through right now is overcoming the eye roll and
to reach a broad audience, maybe. And some levels, I think the answer to it is that you just create something and let it speak for itself, and don't engage in the conversation if you're the creator.
Right.
Let your art be your
yeah.
piece of the conversation.
I mean, if you want to make something, the first thing to do is to make it.
Yeah.
You can't worry before you even make it if the people that you're, you know, in your mind you're making it for are going
to
care.
But I think it's that the internet has given us such access to everyone who's created everything and their background and everything that if you find something in you like it, you just want to go immediately and look up who did it and what their background story is. And then, and like, you're like, I love this. This is like totally my experience. And then when you find out that this person's experience was different than yours in your life, there's like that moment of like, in the past, they would have maintained mysteriousness and this piece of art would have stood by itself as something that's important and relatable to your life. And you can always just imagine that the creator is just like you. And then now you can have the tools to go find out that they're totally different than you. And that recontextualizes the art. And then you engage in these conversations. And I think there's some level of like, who owns that art at that point?
Yeah.
This is a massive conversation that starts from this movie.
I think that even for people who aren't creative in the sense of like writing or performing music, I think it's easy to like, I mean, music, is like, I mean, to me, it's really important. I know not everybody is like, and is into it, but like where you'll find an artist and you listen to them and their experience just speaks to you in such a powerful way. And like, even if you're a person that's not creative, right, you're listening to that and you're like, oh my God, I feel like they're singing to me. I feel like they're talking to me. This feels, you know, like something that I, you know, I experience or I relate to. And then in that point, finding out what they went through in the past and feeling invalidated because, you know, what you thought you shared, you don't. And not even from a creative standpoint.
Yeah, like you were kind of wrong, and that's like a little bit hurtful.
Yeah, like you still,
means that much to
like
you.
You still are like, well, that song still reminds me of me and my experience, but now I feel like, you know, maybe it's not for me or something, right? And it kind of, you know, makes you second guess, even though you can still, you know, you can experience music however you want.
I think there's a side note. I feel like this relates. Shut me up if it doesn't, and then we can roll it back to the movie. But this is a Glenn Hansard thing, and something I appreciate about him is like, it seems like every time, if you listen to a lot of their live recordings, and the Frames are amazing live, and they don't really tour anymore, but you can go back and hear some of their live albums. He'll never intro a song the same way. He'll always tell like a story. He won't say this song is about this concrete thing. Mm-hmm. He'll say this song is about going camping with your friends and looking at the starlight. And then the next time he'll talk about it, this song is about, we'll tell you a story. And it, like mm-hmm. my friends and I used to, there was this dog that lived in our street that was like the stray dog. And it was totally cool, except every once in a while I would chase after any white caravan that drove by, and we were always wondering like, what's up with him? Anyway, this is something like, and I like that he sort of, it feels like he's sort of saying that this song is about a similar theme or some different piece.
It's like about a feeling, not a specific experience.
And he never tells you what the song is, because I think he understands that. The art, sort of like everyone's going to contextualize it themselves. So he tries to kind of give you a feeling.
If you tell someone what it is, you're telling them what it's not.
And like, and also the acknowledgement that not like most creative things don't come from any one moment. If you actually dig in, it's like that. It's an acknowledgement that you are a series of sort of.
It would be impossible to write something without somehow, you know, being influenced by everything else that has happened to you.
Yeah. Well, so anyway, Frank, really good. To me, and this is why I got so emotional, Dave, about it, like why it touched that part of me, is because I think it accessed all these themes in my mind, things that I do think about a lot. And music is very important to me too. And I think it is everyone in this room.
Yeah, we're all pretty into that.
But Dave, you've been in a few bands before, and you've written some, you've toured.
I've had the similar recording studio, can't figure it out what to do at this moment kind of vibe. A bit shorter though, because that goes on for months.
No, they were there for over a year.
Yeah.
Like, they had to kick out new people who came in to replace.
And then they somehow thanked them.
That was so good.
Frank's magic. Man. That was a weird one. In retrospect, you're like, how? What? But I think that it was just the sort of childishness of Frank ultimately, but with this adult veneer.
Yeah.
And without anyone being able to sort of like read into it other than their exact experience, that they were just like. That was his magic too. The mask was part of his magic.
Yeah, it allowed him to be someone else, because he couldn't. He was obviously not that person without the mask.
Yeah. So, what was the longest period you've spent?
I spent 3 weeks straight in a recording studio in Michigan, and yeah, I mean, we went in there with mostly knowing what we were going to record, so that was not a problem. But we still wrote two songs in the studio, and kind of laying everything together felt like the. There was a trying to make it, you treat it so preciously because you think it's the right way to do it. But after you play and listen to it more and everyone else is kind of giving feedback, mm-hmm. you're not sure on when to actually commit the final things to the album or to the track itself. So there's a lot of that, because sometimes you record something you think is great and like they had the things where they just threw away all their tracks and stuff like that. And we'd never threw away whole tracks or anything like that, but it was certainly the going back and forth and keeping iterating on stuff is what you do when you're stuck there. So I identified with that a lot. I grew the really gnarly beard too. So
I really appreciated that part of the film.
I thought the movie was really funny for the first two acts. I think there's a few things that really stand out to me. Shower scene really got me. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. All where right. he sees the head and then he's still in the head. Just a different head with the bag on it.
Yeah.
A lot of the recording weird sounds and chasing each other around. I can't remember what Frank was trying to do to the main character, to John, but he was chasing around telling him to accept something.
He was trying to beat the shit out of him or something.
No, he said it was for the album or something.
Right.
He had like a bat.
He wanted the sound.
Oh, he had a shovel. He had a shovel. He was chasing him with a shovel.
I feel like, and it was something like to accept the gift. Like, oh, yeah. Like the creativity.
Yes, that was
your gift.
Except the gift is good.
What did he make him do when he was playing the keyboard and he like made him like...
Lay that egg. Yeah. He's trying to get him to lay that egg.
And he was like sitting down.
Oh my God.
It's funny.
The character Ron was pretty good, although he was really cool.
He was cool
and really sad at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All their keyboardists basically are trouble is what the movie teaches you.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that was interesting about it is you're really not meant to like the like main character. And I like the fact that I can't remember his name is frustrating. I think it's because they constantly call him different things.
It's John, right?
Yeah, I think it is John in the movie.
John.
Okay. I can't remember, but I know
there's also a Ron, so I understand.
They're always calling him like,
yeah,
you know, different insults.
Ginger bird or something.
Yeah, Gingerbird. but I mean, you're really not meant to like him. He's completely self-absorbed.
Yeah.
He thinks that he has the most to offer to the band and that like, you know, he's just trying to get them to realize his vision. Like it's all about him.
Yeah. But
even with Frank, he's just trying to manipulate Frank because he understands that Frank is the one that holds the band together and who everyone likes and respects. So he just tries to get in Frank's ear and basically get what he wants through that. And so I thought that was really like frustrating,
but
you know,
I didn't get that.
Yeah, he is manipulative and
he's a jerk.
And I didn't feel that way at all. Really.
No.
Oh, well, weird. I think you want to be honest.
That he was naive.
I think, yeah, he was
oh, yeah, for
naive.
Sure.
He didn't know what he's doing. He was just trying to do his best to fit in.
Yeah.
He was trying to do something to get...
But I think he was trying to take control, he didn't feel adequate
completely to anybody there.
Yeah. There might have been a flip where like after they'd sort of spent enough of his money and he didn't really see any results for it where he started feeling like he was due something,
but
he was entitled to something.
That was still his ignorance of being like, I'm going to spend all my money on this.
Yeah, I mean, I go back and forth, but I do think that there's an element like in this movie that explores the idea that unchecked naivete can be incredibly damaging.
Oh,
in fact,
that's
destructive.
That is kind of. I think that's what the
like
movie
he was.
Is about,
he was know? So yeah. young and naive and everything, and like in his desire to fit in, he like didn't think of like he didn't think of his impact on the group as a larger. All he thought of is like, I'm great.
Yeah,
they're great, or they deserve to have me as my, or they need to deserve me as my greatness, or I don't know, just the idea that he was doing them a favor almost. Cause I think for a lot of it, when he perceived their music, I think he saw it as a thing where like he was the only one that was a musician in the sense that he had up until this point come to define music as a musician as, right? Cause they sound so abstract and so, you know, like he didn't know what a theremin was and things like that. Like I think that he thought that he was helping them because their sound wasn't what he thought music sounded
like. Well, it was also that he thought that the measure of success was finding an audience. You know,
sure,
like that scene
sure.
where it's like, you know, people should know you.
And like secretly filming them and stuff like that. As soon as he started filming them, I knew immediately that they did not know it. And I was like, that's fucked up. Like, that's weird.
Yeah. And I do think they handled the Twitter stuff well. Like, cause that's a,
I liked that.
It's a modern, it had
I like that they showed his follower count growing.
Yeah.
He used way too many hashtags.
Well, that's the joke, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even a joke. Like, that's how a lot of people tweet.
Yeah.
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 Hashtag living the dream. Spent all day writing songs. Now time for dinner.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
When I was doing my rap battle with Jeff. Yeah. I did my rap battle with Jeff last weekend. I had written a tweet that I deleted because I thought it was too dumb, but it was like, one that was essentially a rhyme that was like, it rhymed with characters and like ended with like writing on Twitter is hard because I always run out of, but then I was going to do, it was only 70 words. So I thought about just doing 70 characters. So I was gonna do 70 characters of like hashtags. And that was the real is like that hashtags are a necessary part. That like I run out of characters because I need room for all my hashtags.
It's a deeper commentary.
Yeah.
I think the point when Frank turned from being when he started to kind of get too influenced was when he got notified about that there were people that were watching her.
Yeah.
And he asked specifically, what are these 23,000 people?
Yeah, because I think they were sheltering him from that a little bit because they knew that people and that much influence from people would drive him a little crazy.
Yeah, like I think everybody everybody else in the band seemed to know Frank.
Yeah.
In a way, like, they understood who he was and how he, like, what he needed. And I think that
John?
Ginger Bird took advantage of that.
Jay Bird.
Like, I think he took advantage of Frank, and I think he took advantage of the fact that Frank was just a kind of person who was, you know, welcoming to ideas and easily steered and manipulated, and like didn't ever take into account Frank's well-being in his pursuit for personal fame through that band.
Yeah, I guess there's an element that
Sora Forbes.
There were a series of resources to be burned in or like used in his like
that's how it for felt. Success. Like he never.
Yeah, that's I don't think not what he, I got at all from that movie.
That's cool though. I mean, it's getting different, you know, perspectives from it is what's cool about
sure,
it.
Yeah.
So you really related to the main character, it seems like, or like
I didn't relate
like
for him. Accepted, I felt bad for him. I knew, you know, he knew that he couldn't do shit, and you know, he's just trying his best to look good and get in with the band. And then he saw that maybe, you know, they could be something bigger, and he wanted to help Frank get bigger because he knew Frank was a star. He knew Frank was important, but you know, obviously that did not work out.
Do you think that he improves as a songwriter during the course of the movie?
I don't know. Because like I think the end is, that's why the end's super depressing, because he's just like,
bye.
I got nothing. I'm just going to go home and be a dumb piece of shit.
I was happy about that because he realized he was fucking everything up and gave them back.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I'm just talking about his personal,
yeah.
I think he's just done.
Well, yeah, I think that he's going to go on to be a very successful promoter.
I don't think. So I think the problem was that
social media chops.
Yeah,
he was never. He was seeking out success instead of seeking out his craft. Like he's like, I'm a musician. I'm going to be a successful musician, and never did the part where you become a musician.
Yeah.
He just like knew how to play an instrument, wanted
sort
to
of.
Write.
Yes.
Well, yeah, well, like he had the interest, but he just never. He didn't. Pursue it in the path that would lead him to success.
He did
right?
like a 1 year crash course in it at some point, right? Like he was there with them doing the creative process.
Sure, but he wasn't. But I don't feel like he was contributing anything.
Buy in,
like
I don't think he knew how.
No,
he just didn't. Understand.
He kept giving more of the same too, right?
He wasn't.
He was writing his songs, and his songs were the same as they were in the past.
Yeah, right? It doesn't. He didn't have anything to offer, and I thought that was cool because it does set apart because. From his perspective, again, he's the real musician and they are these weirdos with all these weird instruments. And I saw it when the other, when the bassist comes in, or is it the guitarist? When he comes in and he's like, I used to be the keyboardist.
No, it was Ron. Manager.
That's Ron. He was
okay,
just
yeah.
manager.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. When he comes in and he goes, I used to be the keyboardist. And then he plays and he's clearly like incredibly talented.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, these people are musicians and that's what allows them to do this thing where they've broken down this sound to... you know, do something so experimental. Like it's not because they can't play normal instruments that they're out there playing like clinking glass in the woods, right? Yeah. They're doing it because they understand that there's like a value in that kind of sound.
I think he saw the value too. I think he thought they were doing something cool and he was part of this cool thing.
Yeah.
Who you're saying,
you know, I didn't think he didn't think they were not musicians.
But yeah, I mean, there is an element
that,
that
he was.
That's true. And he wasn't adding anything to it.
Yeah, he definitely
he was
wasn't
just,
adding
he was
anything.
Very much like he played the keyboard. And everything else, he was just sort of like, that's cool. But I don't think that he even took
he
those
wasn't,
in his tools that he could use himself. Mm-hmm. He wasn't going to be like, oh, cool. What if we go out in the water? Like, there was no moment where
he
was like, what about this? Or like, he took the microphone.
He wasn't open enough to
he was being chased
be part
with the shovel.
Of it. All he had to do was open up and, you know,
yeah,
do anything. And he would be contributing rather than closing off.
He steered in the space where he sort of was sort of participant and a fan, and that's what made him good at promoting.
Mm-hmm,
he identified what was happening here that was exciting and unique.
Yeah,
but he didn't really add much to it. Instead, he should have switched places with the manager.
No, I think he started going towards the we need a little more pop influence once they got to America.
Yeah,
and he saw what was going on.
He panicked, and the band was panicking too.
I think that it was interesting to find out that it was based on a real person.
Mm-hmm.
So the story was never meant to be like a biopic or anything like that. And it was explicitly not meant to be that because I guess the writer of the either the book that inspired the movie or the
I think it's a book.
It was an article. It was an article.
Oh yeah, it was an article. Yeah. He when speaking to the original Frank, which is Frank Sidebottom, who's a I can't remember.
He's a comedian.
Chris something is his like actual name, but he's a comedian and a terrible musician, and but he's still performed nonsense music.
Yeah.
He didn't want to. He didn't want people to make fun of him.
Yeah.
And so they like purposely made the movie not a direct directly about him, because he was worried that, you know, people would be making fun of him, rather than if it's just inspired by him, then it's not him at all. And it's not things that he actually did. But he, a lot of the things that were unique to Frank in the movie were still like true to that guy, where he would keep the mask on after, yeah, you know, a performance and just continue that character. And when he put it on, he did become like an entirely different person. It was like, it wasn't just like a change in attitude, it was like he was two different people, like they like in the to the point that they thought maybe he was like schizophrenic or something like that. And he they the article that the guy's writing about, and I guess Frank died in like 2010, so very recently, mm-hmm, but when he was writing about him, he like had called to speak to him, and he was like, hey, Frank, can you put Chris on? And then he comes back with like, you know, the normal kind, yeah, of person, like that. He was even like speaking to him in different characters.
Interesting.
And it wasn't like a bit of like, oh, yeah, I'll go get, like, no, it was like, can you put Chris on?
Yeah.
But the one part of the movie that was like like actually 100% like out of the real Frank Sidebottom's life was the whole like, we need a keyboardist for tonight, can you play A, C, and G, show, yeah, up at 5? Like that was, they like, the author was working at a like college or something in the music department, and they just called up and were like, we need a keyboardist. Like, and he was just like the person answering the phones there. Yeah. And he was like, I play keyboard. And they're like, cool, can you play ACG? And he's like, yeah. And they just literally told him to,
that's awesome,
to show up. Like that was a real thing that happened. And that's that was like part of the movie, crazy, that felt like the most obscure. I'm like, yeah, that wouldn't have happened. Like that's so, like so a weird.
Silicon
weird
Valley moment where like, yeah, the, yeah, weirdest part was actually, and it's not even as weird as real life.
Right, right. Yeah. And that was absolutely in real life. So I thought that, I don't know, it was really interesting to read just the, about the act, like the real Frank Sidebottom and stuff, and like looking at the photos, like how eerily similar the mask is, yeah, and stuff. Like, ooh, it was cool.
I mean, the execution was great, acting, music,
yeah,
all really great. Really, mm-hmm, makes it feel like a real,
yeah. The music is story. Music is really cool. Legitimately, very, very good.
Yeah,
like
it's
I
really cool.
Loved that sound.
Mm-hmm. It's very weird because you wanted to at first when you. When he's walking out on stage, you want to be like, oh, they're going to be some weird noise band. But then it actually was like, it came together.
Yeah.
There's a part where he just starts like talking and you're like, oh, this, they're just going to be these weirdos that no one really likes. But then it all comes together. You're like, okay, this is really good.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
Yeah, and it's weird to try to make a movie about music to where you would, everyone in the crowd would be like, that actually is really good. So I'm surprised that they did it.
Well, and the fact that like, not only did they have to make this movie, but they had to make the music for the movie. Like, yeah, they like there was just a lot of creation that had to go into this. It wasn't like making a movie about a band where you have the songs. Like, you had to create the music and then create the creative process that,
yeah,
independent of that.
Yeah, it went into a pantheon of movies about music that had good music for, mm-hmm, me. Josh and I talked about this for a minute, but like Almost Famous, where, yeah, they like wrote original music and, yeah, it was really good and topical for the, like in a specific era of music, and
Dope,
they nailed it.
Dope was good.
Pharrell did all the music for that, and that was, yeah, awesome.
Yeah, there's
you
a
like
few.
Scott Pilgrim. Few
Once also is
Scott Pilgrim.
Beck did all that music.
What was the one?
Scott Pilgrim.
Oh yeah, yeah. Scott Pilgrim had good, and then Once is another one.
Yeah, Once is great.
I mean, pulled in music that already existed for most of it. Mm. There's, yeah, only a couple original compositions for that.
I was really delighted when the credits rolled. And it was produced like studio recordings of the songs from the movie playing. Cause I was like, oh yes. Like they did make real music. Like,
yeah,
I was hoping that like actually cool existed. That Tuft song, man. Tuft is a Tuft good one? Song. Hell yeah. Yeah. I looked, right, at the soundtrack after.
I have to go. You guys are welcome.
I feel like we've talked about, yeah, like, a lot. I need everyone to know that my relationship's new safe word is chinchilla. Just, everyone needs to know that.
That's funny.
That part was kind of was sad too, when you realized that they were fans because they were like making fun of,
oh yeah,
a lot of them. Like the real fans were those two girls, and everybody else seemed like they were kind of like, oh, yeah, chinchilla, chinchilla, like,
oh,
kind of,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah,
but ribbing them, like they weren't.
Yeah, yeah.
They were like, I'm here to see the train wreck.
They're crazy.
But they were just in the meme, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Josh, for forcing me to watch this obscure, otherwise obscure movie.
This was really good. Watch list for like a year, and I just never got to it.
On the way back from Australia 2 years ago on the plane, I was like,
"Oh wow, it's been out that long.
This is a weird looking movie. I'm going to watch this."
You know why I didn't watch it?
Holy crap!
I was worried because I didn't read anything about it. I was worried that the main character was the guy in the mask, and I didn't know if I could stand to watch an entire movie from the perspective of the person in the mask. Yeah. But then when I found out that he was like the supporting character, that actually helped me. Like,
It didn't matter to me. I like weird movies.
I certainly recommend it. Everyone should.
Especially if you like music or composition, even as someone
who's composing in any other space.
Or you just want to learn more about General Hux's, you know, childhood before the
what
drove him serving with Kylo.
Yeah, that's
what drove him to the dark side.
Clearly, this is the foundation.
Couple bad tweets.
He's got another best friend with a mask, guys. I'm just saying, there's a pattern here.
He wants Kylo to be his new singer.
Frank was the original Kylo Ren.
What if
in the next movie there's a chinchilla reference that would kill me?
I don't know if chinchillas exist in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, I don't think that they do.
It's our world. It's in a galaxy far, far away.
It's just, a random password or something. It's just not even a real thing.
Yeah.
Or it's like a squadron.
Yeah.
Chinchilla 3, checking in.
All right. If you have any questions or topics you would like us to discuss, email podcast@penny-archive.com. Oh, yeah. And if you like these, I'm considering making this a separate podcast. So send me some emails and let me know. Otherwise, it'll just be part of this shit that we're doing here. Bye.
Word.
Bye. All right.